Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. I don't think the weather knows what it wants to be up here in Canada. It's raining and 10 degrees one day, and then it's minus 5 and snowing the next day, and seems to go back and forth every couple days. So, yeah, kind of weird weather for February.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's definitely warm here today. I went for a run earlier, and it was like 60 degrees or so. Even halfway through the run, I took my kind of like long sleeve shirt off and actually left it at a park bench, knowing I'd be circling back. So yeah, definitely weird weather.
Definitely weird. How are things with you?
They're pretty good. Yesterday at this time, I was in a state of just, I don't know, catatonic sort of frustration, but I'm much better now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, just short. The short of it is, I think we've all, at least, I think most of us have been there. It started out well with some web page updates I was making, and then it just turned into a bit of a, I want to say rabbit hole, but I think you say rabbit trail. But you know,
rabbit hole. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then later, already at a state of frustration, I hear from my team that our not full on Facebook app, but we have a quote unquote Facebook app that's very simple. All it does is essentially does Facebook login for our customers. So it's like one app, one app ID. And apparently something happened with it, or Facebook changed something like the way permissions or rights are managed. And it set off this chain of events of like, some other like business validation. And then my tech lead creates a he didn't know. So he's like, let me try to solve this myself. I'll just create another business account. And I have another business account. And it just turned into this like weird, he couldn't validate the account. He couldn't add me. Like we couldn't submit the documentation. And in the meantime, the app wasn't allowing people to like log in with an SSO. Long story short, that was like half the day of like trying to figure this out and submit the stuff to Facebook, knowing that probably just a pimple on a whatever for them. So not going to care, but all's well that ends well. By like, didn't have to do too much, but by this morning it was resolved. So, but it was like a huge stressor over the day with a day that just was not going right already. So
oh, those days suck. If like, especially when you see like all of these things that you're kind of responsible for in some level just not working. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so I'm at a total 180 in my mood and my whatever. If anyone that talked to me yesterday at this time, including my wife and other people, is probably just like, you were a totally different person yesterday. So
it's crazy how things like that can be kind of emotional, eh? like when you're doing something that's like for the business, and so in the grand scheme of things, like it's just business, it's just work, but like it gets to you, right? You want to do the best you can. You don't want to mess up other people's days. And
100%. I just feel like there's a level of tolerance you have for like, but it's almost like you get below a certain threshold or above a certain threshold, however you want to see it. And then all of a sudden it's like, you're like, it's hard to get back, right? It's just like, it's a tipping point, so to speak.
Yeah. So, well, we have some positive things we wanted to talk about today. What, you want to kick that off for us?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't know if it's positive for, it depends on whose perspective, but yeah, today I wanted to talk about, kind of buying behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. So I buy software for the business oftentimes. And I was thinking about the other day, and they are, you know, like we were citing earlier, a lot of them are very like emotional for whatever reasons, as much as we all want to think we're logical people, especially developers, but we're all emotional. And like we have our own trauma and issues and reasons why we buy certain things, or reasons why we don't want to buy certain things, or reasons why we buy things but are like kind of angry about it.
Yep.
So I want to talk to talk about a couple like pages. So in those, I think excluding the obvious, like bought something, happy I bought it, or just fairly like happy and it's fine. Like it's fine. No big deal. Nothing worth talking about. The other categories I wanted to talk about are services or software that I subscribe to or bought, but I want to quit. So okay. That's like one category.
So, another one are ones we're on that I bought. Category two now? We're on category two. Could you? So the one.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't like really talking much about the good. The good is just like, just shove it off the side. I think everyone knows what that. You're just, you're fair, sure. You're happy, you're good enough.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, category two is like, I kind of want to quit these. And let me just other categories and then I'll go into some of the examples. The next one is like, I bought, but I'm just sort of conflicted with it. And I'm happy with it, but I'm conflicted about it. And then the last one are things I am interested in buying, aspire to buy, but I'm what I'm calling like a lurker, right? Like I watch it. It's like, it's not an immediate need, but I know it's like a future need. That one, those are interesting ones too. So,
okay. Like gym equipment, you know, I want to get gym equipment eventually and be healthy eventually, but not today.
Maybe not, probably not as that far away. It's probably more of like, I'm just talking about like software services. So the ones in that lurker category for me are often like these iPasses, if you've seen those, like Zapier types of things. I think that's what they're called, like integrated platform as a service types of things. So I watch a lot of them in terms of, you know, we build our own integrations, but oftentimes like, hey, it'd be nice to sometimes just be able to connect, have these connections for our service with some of these long tail of like CRM and email marketing platforms that maybe we get ones or two. It's not worth building an integration for. So I'm always looking at those types of platforms that are like, connect to one API here and we'll connect you to 50 of the CRMs. Like we'll manage those connections and like you just have people OAuth and whatnot. So that's an area that I feel like I'm a lurker on, if that makes sense.
Okay. And so what do you do when you're lurking? Do you like sign up for a free trial? Do you just like kind of check them out on social? What do you do when you're a lurker?
I'm gathering information. Like oftentimes, like sometimes if I usually don't do a trial. At that point, I'm not like in a buying motion, I'm in a research motion. So it's like I have in my Asana boards, like just information about each one. I might categorize them. I might create a little spreadsheet, that type of stuff. So, and until I'm in a buying motion, do I start to like whittle down what I'm really looking for? And if I can't find the information on their websites, then I'm like asking and I'll add to this list, like if I'm talking to another founder in passing and they mention a service, I'm like, oh, what do you guys use for that? I don't know about that one. Let me write that down. Or how do you like that? Right. I'll use those opportunistic times to potentially get more information. So most of those companies probably don't know I exist. Or if they have emailed me, I don't respond because I don't care. I'm not in a buying cycle. Like I said, I'm not ready to buy. And I know once I express any sort of intent or interest, like they're going to be on me like white on rice. Yeah. So
I feel like that's the fear of so many people. It's like, I don't want to get like a bazillion emails and all these follow-ups and stuff. So like, is there like, what are common things that kind of move you out of the lurking phase? Is it that you finally find enough information, or is it more common that like, you know, something has changed within your needs where you're finally like, okay, yeah, I need to buy this thing now.
Yeah. It's internal. It's when we're ready, right? Because like until I know I'm in a buying cycle, then I don't engage, right? So so it's all internally driven. I would say there's not a lot they can do other than, you know, for me, it's probably like if I didn't start the Asana board or have like information on them, then like staying in top of mind of that topic But honestly, it's probably like, there's not a lot they can do, honestly. Like, I think it's really just mostly internally driven, and that's okay, right? Like, from a buyer perspective. But of course, companies want to know, how can I nudge that? What conversation, what pain points can I advertise? Can I like start throwing that gets you to accelerate? But most of the time, I know it's like, now I have so many other threads going on and I'm already having enough time trying to prioritize. Like, I'm really going to let someone outside influence me.
Yeah. And I guess that makes sense, right? Stay top of mind. So that way that when you are ready to have a decision, then you right away know about them and you're thinking about them. That makes a lot of sense. So you had one other one there that was like the I'm unhappy category.
Oh, so this is the conflicted one. So we're walking backwards now to give the examples. So like a conflicted stage. So this one's interesting. This is like a, I don't know if I will name them by service name, but I'll just say it's a service provider we use. I just don't enjoy their brand, so to speak. Mm. Like, if you look at the way they talk on social media, you look at the way they present themselves. I just don't like the vibe of the brand, but I like the product. So that's why I'm sort of conflicted. And oftentimes, if I've recommended, I'm actually even weary of recommending it to people because I don't want their brand to reflect on me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And so do you think that like for conflicted, is there other reasons to be conflicted other than the branding? Like, are there ones where like you don't like how the product works or like, I don't know, think the product is a little bit crappy, but there's not many other good solutions or like something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. For this one, I love the product. It's more of like, I guess this is I'm just like conflicted with the brand, but not conflicted enough to change, right? Like I'm not looking for a new solution. Yeah. Like if I had my choice, I wish their brand was something that I felt a little more like in line with or supportive of. So maybe I would, you know, talk about them more, or maybe I would like engage with them more, or try to be a case study or potentially do a partnership or some other things that potentially could be, you know, mutually beneficial.
And so I guess like for the company that's in that situation, like for them, probably the best course of action is to like look for feedback from customers, and maybe, you know, one or two customers might be willing to say, you know, if you're lucky, that they don't like your brand very much, and you can kind of correct, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think it's a problem to solve. So like, I think I'm the, you know, if it's working for them, and oftentimes I think the brand may come from like them as people. So it's like, it just means I don't like them, but that's okay. Like, you buy stuff from, and like, there's not going to change that. And they're not going to change because they want me to like them. Right. So they have plenty of other people that enjoy it enough, or it may not be a problem. Right. That's what I'm saying. So I don't know if it's something to fix. I'm just mentioning like how I feel about these different companies for different buying reasons. Right. Like, so if I could roll back and all things being equal, if there was another brand that was like the exact same product, but it was a brand I could get behind, then I probably would have picked that one.
So you're sounding like my wife now. I'm not supposed to fix the problem. I'm just supposed to listen and empathize.
Pretty much.
Good stuff.
For this
one. All right. What else you got? What was your first one?
So the last, the I guess now we're walking backwards. So it's like the second category I mentioned, but these are ones that I'd like to quit. So these kind of cross over that threshold that we use them, but like for different reasons, I'm sort of like annoyed and looking to more or less quit. So so again, there's another company, and again, don't want to, not trying to name names and shame people, but I would say, so there's three in this category. This one is the one that kind of started off my even thinking about this.
Okay.
So one is a company that, we use in a certain way, like very, how would I put it? It's not a high usage, but it had good value. Okay. So it was like, I'll just say it was like a $50 a month product, and it had enough value that it was worth like keeping around.
Can you say like what category that product is in? Like, is it email software? Or is it something else?
No, it's more of like an automated demo type of software.
Okay, cool.
So it was enough that it was like, it slid in nicely with our self-service product, a way people could buy in addition to our high touch. So sort of in between, we have this internal philosophy of letting customers buy how they want to buy. So if someone requests a demo, but they're not of necessarily like high readiness or high quality, we send them to an automated demo that also will have a live person over chat that can answer questions. So it's sort of like a nice quick way you can get a demo very quickly. We also route people there if they just need to talk to someone that day and no one's available, but like no one's available for an actual call. Yeah. So anyway, now they have not grandfathered pricing. So I don't know what that's called. Like basically when they keep increasing the price and they follow the typical, I guess indie SaaS advice, which is like raise your prices. Yeah, yeah. But again, it's from the perspective of the founder, like founders helping other founders. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, it kind of pisses me off. Like, and it's just, it's one of these things where at $50 a month, it had good value. Mm-hmm. And yes, they might have added features, but I don't use those features. I just let it be. Like, to me, it's a fixed like thing. And basically if you're not grandfathering the pricing, you're changing the value proposition that I already agreed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm a little bit more of a, I know everyone will say that, and then so many founders will make the argument of not grandfathering pricing. Personally, like, we always grandfather pricing because I feel like, hey, they bought in for a certain thing. Maybe I don't have to give them every new feature either.
Sure.
Like, you're not guaranteed that either. But so it's an agreement on both sides. But I feel like you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. And yes, maybe you can extract more value, but for the people that were getting enough value at that price, you're making them feel icky. And this is one I just kind of want to quit because it's not giving us a tremendous amount of value. And now the price is like $100 or it keeps going up. And I'm just like, yeah, great. You've added features, but I haven't even been in the platform to make any changes in like 6 months. And it was doing fine, doing its single job, me paying $50 a month. So that's something I'm honestly looking to quit, but I'm okay with even rerouting them back to real people now too. So it's sort of a more about of like, when's there going to be enough time to just go and decouple that? So,
yeah, it sounds like there's also a change in your internal structure because like to move from an automated solution that's $50 a month or even $100 a month to a live person, like that's quite a, like there's probably still a cost savings that would make it not worth doing the change. But if you're able to justify it internally, then it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's other reasons why we want to switch, but it's changed the unit economics, I'll say, of all of that has changed over the past like year versus when we first implemented it. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it's also an emotional thing too, where if you feel like you're getting, the short end of the stick, then it's like, well, I don't care how good you are. Like, I'm going to find some other alternatives at some point.
Yeah, people, it turns emotional, right? It turns like, hey, you, in my mind, you've sort of changed the deal, right? And I don't like that. And it feels icky to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are two other in this category. We don't know if we can kind of speed through them. One is it's a big company that we use for, I'll say, some back office paperwork of sorts. And they have been in the news a lot for shady behavior. And they are a great product. And again, these are good products. So it's like, aside from the fact that everyone I'm talking about is like a good product. And but they've done, the CEO has done some shady or questionable things. There's been some internal lawsuits to this company from like for discrimination and all these other things. And you're just like, again, conflicted. And I want to quit them, but it's also like tied up in a lot of like, is it worth the effort to switch this just from a like moral or emotional standpoint? So,
well, I guess though, at some point, it also it's a risk, right? Like you're a little bit of these things. Like some of it definitely is emotional, but there's part of it where it's just like I want to, you know, kind of shelter myself from future problems. And one way to do that is to get off of this place where there seems to be a lot of problems.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. It's not that core. It's it's just more of like, again, some of these things have deeper tentacles, but they're not necessarily into like workflows, but they're not necessarily like, I'm not worried about the service like going down. Like they're, so it's less about that risk side. And then the last one is one, again, a decent product, and it's just like, it isn't fulfilling the promise that it was supposed to do, not from their fault, but just from our own behaviors. Like this is an internal knowledge base thing. You know, we probably have, you know, three or four different solutions that can store knowledge, at least three or four. That's probably way on the low side. But one of these ones that was like, oh yeah, we'll take stuff easily from Slack. We'll update you when things are out of date. And honestly, it does that, but it's actually super annoying. So, and no one uses it. So it's almost one of these things like the behavior change I thought people would have out of this would take our like knowledge management and keeping up to date with certain things like to a new level, but it honestly doesn't really fulfill the promise. And then when you go back and look at it and you're like, okay, well now it's just a knowledge base that no different than all these other solutions we already have.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of just like, why am I paying, you know, $200 a month for this? Like this just feel like I'm not getting the value promise. So until again, we take the time to move all the data into another thing, but it's going to sit there and be a reminder when I get a $200 a month bill. So,
and every month you'll go, and then you'll go, well, there's other things I have to do.
Yeah. And it's usually like, hey, so-and-so can, and it's just like, is this really a priority? No, not really. Like versus the other things we have going on. Right. So it meanders along and it just sits there and I want to quit.
Yeah. Well, that's where like a lot of these things of having your data locked in is like such a moat, right? Like even if you can technically get it out, just the fact that you have to do it is like a big piece of inertia, right? Like you have to really be committed to be able to actually make that change.
Yeah, it's a there's a tremendous amount of these just the energy and the change management and like or the FOMO or the fear of like losing some things or and whatnot.
So when you've got like when you've reflected on having all these different products that you have different, you know, negative feelings about, have you does that change how you consider new products? So like because you've had ones where like you didn't like the brand and so you know you wanted to kind of get away from them. Do you spend more time considering the brand when you buy, look at a new product, or you still kind of go for, oh, maybe this will have value and off you go?
Yeah, I don't think any of this changes my behavior because if I look at them, if I look at it at a in an aggregate, there's plenty of other products I get immense value out of. So it doesn't change that. It's sort of, it's just part of sort of the game, so to speak, right? Like and the same thing with like buying things personally, like when you mentioned gym equipment and things like that. It's like I'm not gonna change my behavior necessarily. Now maybe if it's something I on a repeat purchase, so maybe like if I'm buying a car and I end up getting a car that let's say the seat is uncomfortable or whatever, then maybe next time I'm buying a car I'm gonna test drive longer or like take it more through its paces because now that's sort of like a painful enough memory that changes my behavior for that particular software. So I guess maybe, yeah. I mean, if I think about some of these other softwares, it could change my behavior because anytime I use one of these, I do, now that you're a little more knowledgeable about your own use case, your own habits, your own sort of mental value metric for it. So, I will track back and say it will affect buying similar products.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely had it where like I've gotten annoyed with the like sales and free trial process at times with different companies. And like, you know, just where you get, there's too many hoops to jump through, or there's, you know, too many, you have to get on a call and you don't really want to get on a call because it's not that important to you. Where I've just started sometimes with those like multiple hoops type things, I'll just start Googling for screenshots of their product before I'll even like dive into it. And I won't even consider a whole lot on their marketing site at times too, just where it's like, that's nice marketing copy, but like, what does it actually do? Is it actually going to, is it actually worth my time to get into a trial and try this thing out or not?
Interesting. I didn't think about it that way, but I guess, just like you were asking me about, you know, when I was talking about the software I was lurking on, like, what do I do to engage? And I guess I have similar behaviors as well, because I don't want to get assaulted, right? And maybe it's like the everyone wanted to start with like product-led stuff and whatnot. And I think you used to be able to sign up for a trial and know maybe you're getting some automated emails, but you weren't getting phone calls. You weren't getting like individual emails from a sales rep. And you have to finally say no to get them to stop like emailing you. Right. So, and again, I think it does affect like, again, how we try to approach it. Like we try to do that whole, you know, like I mentioned, let people buy how they want to buy. But at the same time, not everyone abides by that, right? So they're not going to know or trust like Referral Rock any differently. So is there still going to be a general reluctance to sign up for a free trial? Probably, right? Like conditions are changing because marketers or someone abused the trust of some of these things and went a little too far. I don't know. And part of me, like I go into these and I sort of know you're going to get those. So it's like, I kind of just like, you just kind of know. And I'm like, yeah, I know they're going to do that. Is it compelling enough for me to, you know, kick the tires? But you're right. If I could look at screenshots or if I can use one of those interactive demo things without having to sign up, that is at least a little refreshing for this day and age. Right. So.
Yeah. And I guess that's like, that's a big thing of just being different too. Like, I know that's kind of an adage in marketing, right? That is, as you get a new way of sharing information, then everybody kind of gets used to that and it's no longer special and you no longer are different. But I think that's with your onboarding and your marketing too. It's like, you just got to keep trying to be better at it. And, you know, maybe you can kind of get around some of these problems that people have seen in the past.
Yeah, I do think there is something different to sort of differentiate in that, Mark. It's actually something I've been actually writing a bit about this and thinking a lot about it lately, mostly because I've had widely different experiences with a couple different like financial products lately. There's actually one I signed up for recently. Like it's a high yield interest savings account type of thing. And I will say it was a very refreshing experience. So everything was super smooth. Everything was like their whole interface was very modern, which you kind of don't expect. Like you expect banks and financial things to have these rickety things. Like you're filling out a web form and it looks like it has basically default styles, like zero CSS. You know, it's just like as the browser wants to interpret an input box type of style to this long form with 1,000 entries, right? So but I had this super refreshing experience, and I like the word refreshing because it was differentiated based off of what I was expecting out of a financial product, right? So it was there was all these other things. I mean, and you know, I'm a, you know, a fan and critique of referral programs, but it was a phenomenal referral program too. It answered their FAQ for this was amazing. Any of their FAQs on the site were amazing. There was this one about talking about FDIC insurance, and they had these beautiful like tables that said, oh, if you're this person, but you add a beneficiary, like this is your FDIC insurance amount. And it was just like, instead of having you do the work and you doing all the calculus, They just went 2-3 steps further to make it that much easier. And across the board, it was, like I said, a super refreshing experience. It's enough that I'm talking about it now, but in an industry where I was not expecting, and I was expecting to get like, here's your 50-page form and fax X in and like, you know, retina scan your face and send it in via mail or something, like type of experience to apply for, you know, a financial product.
Yeah. It does make a difference though. Like, I think it's more than just like a one-off experience. Like I've had a couple times with Testing Taxi and with Status List where people have commented on the user interface as one of the reasons why they felt that they could trust the product and that they liked it a lot better over the competitors. And I always kind of brush that off as, oh, they just, you know, they're just saying nice things. But I think there is something to it, like, right? Like where it feels professional, right? It feels like they understand you a bit better. That's really cool that your bank was that good.
So it was funny, interesting enough, on the flip side, I applied for a different financial product and it was fine, right? Like, and their referral program left things to be desired. It was not a dual-sided thing. It was actually, if anything, a little weird because I actually asked my friend, I was like, because they were talking about this other like business credit card. And I was like, oh, do they have a referral code? Because I'll use your code. Mm. And they sent it and it was very confusing because they sent it and all the language was like, oh yeah, like use this person's code so they can get something. And it was very vague. Oh. And then I asked the person, I was like, what did it look like on your side? And they're like, well, it said that you'd get this great offer, blah, blah, blah. And I looked, I was like, I don't see any details about any offer. It's the same intro offer that they give to everyone. And we're like, oh, that's icky. Like it was like the way they prompted it was like, so the other, she would get something, but I wasn't really getting anything, which is fine. But the way it was worded was like, on her side, it made it seem like she was doing me a favor. And then when I got the thing, it said, make sure you have to use this code so your friend gets something. And it was like this very, you know, sneaky and kind of shady, right? Not shady, but just like, huh.
Yeah, you're like, what's going on? That's
left a little bit of a bad taste. I don't even care about the reward. It was just that it wasn't transparent and clear. So.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Fun fact related to usability. I was on a government website the other day because we have to do some tax stuff this time of year around here. And they had a notice that said, you must have Internet Explorer 6 or higher if you want to use this website. And 512 megabytes of RAM. And I was like,
sweet. They actually told you how much RAM you need to use their browser. Like, and you're probably like, does that even actually matter? But okay, I'll let you.
Well, you know, if you go on there with Internet Explorer 4, you're going to have problems. So
true.
Good stuff, Josh. Is there anything else you want to talk about today?
No, it's just interesting thinking about buyer psychology from your own point of view, but then also flipping it, you know, on the other side of the table.
Yeah, I think we might have to do a follow up on the more of the buying side or some of that. There's more there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, let's do that more because I think you're going through some paces and some interesting things, seeing things that maybe you haven't seen from a seller perspective before, right? So,
All right. Cool. Well, we'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Talk to you later.
Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.